Well, it's now about 11 a.m. Mountain Time, so I've started the recording, and I'd like to say welcome to everybody to our first CIDR session of 2009. And I'd like to open the session with an invitation to distance education researchers. I'm currently building the schedule for the spring, and I have a couple of spots still open. So if you or a colleague that you know of have a research project that you'd like to share with the CIDR community, I invite you to contact me so that we can discuss presenting that in a future CIDR session. And I'll just put my email address in the text box there. So feel free to contact me there. And also, as we just mentioned, this CIDR session will be recorded and available from the CIDR site, and that URL is up there. So if you'd like to go back and review the session or know of a colleague who wished to attend today but wasn't able, just please pass that along to that person. And I'm happy to welcome back Dr. Michael Barber. Michael did a presentation for CIDR back in the fall of 2007, where he discussed the lessons he had learned from researching virtual schools in Newfoundland and Labrador. And for those of you who don't know Michael, he is currently working as an assistant professor in instructional technology at Wayne State University in Detroit. Michael's originally from Newfoundland, and he completed both his bachelor and master's degree in education at Memorial University. Prior to his completing his degrees in education, Michael completed his Bachelor of Arts with a major in political science and a minor in history at Carleton University in Ottawa. Michael later went on to complete his PhD in instructional technology at the University of Georgia in Athens. Now, outside of all of his academic endeavors, and he has many, Michael has extensive experience as a teacher and a researcher and an instructional designer. He taught for 4 years at Discovery Collegiate in Bonavista, Newfoundland, and during his first year in that position, Michael started a district-based online learning program called the Center for Advanced Placement Education. And this program serves students not only in Newfoundland, but Pennsylvania, Texas, California, and Massachusetts. And I know Arlene might be interested in this. In 2001, he was asked to co-design and co-teach an online advanced placement European history course for the Illinois Virtual High School, and he has co-taught that course ever since. He later taught and co-designed a similar course for Aventa School, which is a private provider of K-12 online learning. Now, while working in Newfoundland and Labrador, Michael also held district-level positions, and he served as the Partnership Development Coordinator for the Vista School District. And in 2001, which seems to have been a busy year for him, Michael was named one of the 10 district facilitators for the Center for Distance Learning and Innovation. Now, during that time, he began researching the K-12 online learning. And this past fall, he authored an abbreviated report on the state of K-12 online learning in Canada for the International Association for K-12 Online Learning. And this report is expected to become an annual publication if you're interested. Now, Robin Stewart, I'm not sure she's made it here yet. I'll have to scroll down. Currently works for the Chatham-Kent Public Library as an IT librarian. And while completing her Master of Library and Information Science at Wayne State University, Robin had the opportunity to work with Michael on this project by providing research support. So I'm hoping she'll be able to join us here today for this presentation. And Michael is here to provide us with that snapshot of the state of K-12 online learning in Canada. So without any further ado, I'll hand the mic over to you, Michael.
Thanks, Lynn. I'm not sure if Robin will be able to join us. She's at the library today. So when they have weather, she's normally in the back. But when they have weather, depending on what the roads are like, she often gets moved up to the frontline staff. And if that's the case, she won't be able to join us. But hopefully she will. As Lynn mentioned, I'm Mike Barber at Wayne State University in Detroit, although I continue to live on this side of the border in Windsor, Ontario, and just across the international bridge there whenever I need to go into the office. Basically, so let's move ahead, I guess. the background to the presentation that I want to give today is based upon two things. The first is the report that we did for what was then the North American Council for Online Learning. It's now the International Association for K-12 Online Learning. So it's no longer NACL, it's iNACL now. And you can link to a PDF of that snapshot study, or abbreviated study as I tend to call it. The other area that feeds into this report is a project that, and project is used very loosely here, an initiative that I've been working on basically to try and provide more information about K-12 online learning in Canada. It's called Virtual Schooling in Canada, and the wiki site is available there. And you can visit either of those sites. The wiki site is something we started up a while ago, although most of the information, it's only strand 4, which is the annotated bibliography, that we've really made any headway on. We've got a lot of information in the background that we haven't put up on the wiki yet for the other areas. But that sort of builds where a lot of this information comes from. To give you some background on the iNACL report, which I think is probably something that if you saw the information for this presentation on the website, they linked in the report just above or just below the description. Last year when I first approached the North American Council for Online Learning about doing this, we were looking to try to get the report sponsored in the same way that John Watson has been able to do with the Keeping Pace in Online Learning reports that have come out of the United States over the last 4 years. Essentially, he gets a number of virtual schools or providers of virtual school services to sponsor a portion of the report, and then they develop it. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get any funding to do the study that we had envisioned, so we had a decision to make late in the spring-summer time frame, early summer time frame, whether or not we would just wait until the following year, or if we would try to get something out for NACL's annual conference, which is the virtual school symposium, typically happens somewhere between the second week of October to the second week of November. This past year it was in Phoenix. Next year coming up it's in Austin, Texas. We made the decision to basically try to get something out into the public domain. And the reason why I had approached NACL about this initially, and the reason why we decided to go ahead with an abbreviated version of the study, was because compared to the United States, we don't have a lot of literature available on what's going on in K-12 online learning in Canada. And the literature that we do have available tends to be very focused in specific geographic areas. The crowd at Memorial University have done a very good job looking at what goes on in Newfoundland, first with the Vista School District Digital Intranet that Ken Stevens and his colleagues worked on, and now they've got a Cura grant down there, and they're working with the CDLI on a fairly extensive research initiative down there. There's been a number of studies that have come out, dissertation studies and some evaluation reports coming out of Alberta. The BC Teachers Federation has been fairly active in putting out information about what's going on in British Columbia, but beyond those three provinces, there isn't that much available, with the exception of a scattered conference proposal here and there. So we decided that it was better to get something out as opposed to having nothing available at all. So the idea behind it was to basically get roughly a page worth of material, although if you look through the report, you'll notice that there's a little bit less than that, about each of the provinces and territories to give some sense as to the level of K-12 online learning activity and the level of recognition of K-12 online learning in the legislation or policy that were publicly available from the government. And then to take a look at three or four provinces, we were hoping to do four, in the end we only did three, a little more extensive look on those. And the three that we did look at, Newfoundland and Labrador was one of them because of my own background in there. I happened to meet Tim Linkelman out in British Columbia, who was a wonderful source of information. So British Columbia became one of the other three provinces, and then Alison Slack in Ontario became a wonderful source of information for the case study in Ontario. So those were the three that were in there. So that's a bit about the background. In terms of the methodology, and I mention all of this stuff up front before I get into it because these are kind of the caveats of the report. It is not intended to be a complete report. There's a reason why we call it a snapshot. Next year's version won't be a snapshot. It'll just be State of the Nation study, K-12 online learning in Canada. Because of the time, because of the time of year, the fact that it was the summer, our initial intention was that we were going to review what we could find based from Ministry of Education websites and government documents that I could access either here in Windsor or over in Detroit, talking with people who were engaged in K-12 online learning in the various provinces. Then our plan was originally to set up surveys that we would have sent to each of the ministries of education, and then following up with interviews after those surveys with some of the key personnel to sort of fill in the details of the surveys. Because of the time frame and because of the lack of funding, particularly graduate student funding, on my part, we weren't able to do the surveys or the interviews. So essentially, if it was in a government report that we could access in the library, if it was available on the website, or if I happened to already have a contact in that particular province, which I did for most provinces, a contact who was able to provide a lot of information. Some were able to provide a lot of information. Some were able to provide just information about their own context. So those are some of the limitations that you have with the methodology. The reason why I thought this was important to do, again, is because we've been at this a long time. We've been at both distance education at the K-12 level and online learning at the K-12 level longer than our neighbors to the south. But when you compare the amount that's known about our experience compared to theirs, there's a big difference. And actually, this slide that's here now is a good example of some of the limitations of this report. If you look in the report, one of the things that you'll notice, and I can't remember if it's in the executive summary or if it's once you start to get into the meat of it, the literature that's out there, depending on which ones you read, says that the first virtual school was planned in Ontario in 94 or began operating in either Manitoba or in Alberta in 95-96. Now, the interesting thing about that is within, I think, about 48 hours of the report going live on the NACO website, Ernie Mannering, who's the principal or who's involved with the school district in British Columbia, who runs the eBus Academy, emailed me to let me know that his district had been operating a virtual school, an online program out there since 1993. And I think that's a good example of why something like this was needed out in the public domain, because there's a lot that is going on within K-12 online learning in Canada that we don't know about. The other thing is that for the United States, at least the American experience, one of the biggest reasons why you see K-12 online learning growing so much is because of the educational choice movement, which tends not to be the case in Canada. In Canada, distance ed at the K-12 level has primarily been used as a way of servicing rural areas. You're starting to see it being used more and more in urban areas now, but if you go back to when, for example, the eBus Academy would have started in 93, or when correspondence education first started back in 1919, and any of the provinces. The reason why you see it being used initially is to provide opportunities for those rural areas. So let's look at what we find across the country. Okay, John, this is, again, one of the reasons why we're doing this. I'll have contact information at the end, and one of the things that I'm going to ask people is I'm going to ask them to send me specific things if they know of other things, and I'll give a list of that in the end. The other thing I forgot to mention up front, I can't remember if Lynn mentioned it either. If you have questions, feel free to ask them in the text box as we're going through. I should also finish up with lots of time for questions at the end, so if it's kind of a convoluted question that works better verbally than it does in text, feel free to hold on to it till then. In looking at the national overview, I tried to use a system that would be familiar with most of the people who would read the book. And given the fact that the North American Council for Online Learning were the ones who were publishing and distributing it, the vast majority of people, even though it is a study about what's going on in Canada, the vast majority of people who would be reading it would be the American audience. So I tried to use the categories that were the Canadian versions of what John Watson had used in his Keeping Pace reports. Now, there had to be some differences there because our experience is a little different. As you can see here, with the exception, as best we could tell, with Prince Edward Island, where we didn't see much in the way of K-12 online learning activity, there was some K-12 online learning, and we use the term online learning very loosely because depending on the province, in some cases that's the use of instructional television, in some cases it is the virtual schooling model, in some cases it's still using some correspondence style education, and in some cases it's a combination of all three. So we were using sort of online learning in a very loose way in that respect, but pretty much every province had some level of activity with the exception of Prince Edward Island. Some provinces had very established programs that you could neatly define. Others, the definition of the programs were a little bit stickier. The map that we've got here is the best way in which we could represent it, although in all honesty, every single province had nuances where, you know, even though there are three purple ones out there, all three purple ones kind of operate very differently. So it's, you know, there's provincial programs with significant district-based stuff with some private, depending on which of those three provinces you look at, and we'll talk a little bit about each of them. There are different nuances in terms of how that provincial system works or how the district-based programs operate. So looking at, I guess we'll go, well, being from Newfoundland, I'm going to start with my own home province here. Looking at the single provincial programs, there's two provinces that we identified that pretty much all they had was a single province-wide program that the that was in use in the province, and those two were Newfoundland and Nova Scotia. In both cases, they were housed within the Ministry of Education, although being run by an independent group within the ministry. In both cases, they were primarily supplemental programs. One of the interesting things which we see sporadically throughout the rest of the country, some online learning programs in other provinces use it, others don't, but it was the use of, in Newfoundland they're called mediating teachers, in New Brunswick they were called on-site facilitators, but basically some school-based personnel that was specifically tasked or had the title of, you know, being responsible for those students in the school while they were engaged in distance education. One of the other interesting features of both of these programs as well was the level of use of classroom teachers. So as a classroom teacher at Discovery Collegiate in Buena Vista, where I was for four years, I could basically use the curriculum materials that the CDLI provides with my students, so I could bring the laptop card into the room, or I could bring them all to the computer lab, and we could go through essentially a blended or a hybrid model. And in some cases, that's fairly extensive. From my conversations with the folks in New Brunswick, they've left me with the impression that as much as a third of their student use of the material is through this blended model, so with classroom teachers using it and not actually at a distance. Moving westward, the next kind of model that you come up with are provincial programs where there's some district activity. And I'll be honest with you, in all three of these cases, the only one that I can speak to with a great deal of authority is Saskatchewan, only because there's a gentleman in the distance or in the Department of Education in Saskatchewan, who has been very helpful with the information. In the case of Nova Scotia, I'll be quite honest and say that the information, I noticed there's a group here from Nova Scotia today, and when I get to that last slide and ask for some information, I'm hoping that you guys are some of the ones that contact me. In the case of Nova Scotia, it was basically all document review or website review. In the case of Manitoba, it was speaking with, I think there's about a half dozen principals who were engaged in online learning that were able to give basically their perceptions of what was going on there. There wasn't anyone at the ministry that I was able to get a hold of, and from looking at the ministry's website, it was very and their documents, it was very difficult to sort of ascertain what was going on there. So that's kind of the level. In the case of Nova Scotia, as best as I was able to tell, there was a French-speaking program that was initiated 2 to 4, maybe 5 years ago that appears to have expanded into the Nova Scotia Virtual School, although I'm not sure the connection between the two. There are at least 2 district-based programs that are creating their own content and managing their own online learning program. There may be a third. In the case of Manitoba, it appears that it is a provincial-based program that pretty much all of the districts participate in the provincial program, and in my conversations with the principals, as best I can tell, it's primarily non-online, so those other forms of distance ed that we were talking about. To talk a little bit, and I can speak about Saskatchewan with a little bit more specificity because of my contact in the Ministry of Education, province-wide, they provide 2 options. The first is a correspondence option that's done through the Technology Supported Learning Division, and they have been in operation for quite some time now, although not necessarily under that label, offering correspondence education, although they will cease to exist at the end of this year. There's also a smaller number of courses that they offer through a synchronous instructional instructional television program. I believe there's a couple of math, science, and I believe a second language course that's in there in the ITV offerings. There are a number of school districts that have started their own programs, the oldest of which would probably be the Saskatoon Cyber Catholic School. This group has joined together to form the Saskatchewan Distance Learning Course Repository, which really isn't an organization. It's more just an area where you can go and find out which school district is offering which courses. As part of the ending of the TSL division within the Ministry of Ed, the ministry has provided districts with lump sum payments to either create their own capacity or for them to put money aside to purchase capacity from other school districts so that the ministry is still providing financial support for the school districts to allow them to participate in distance education. They're just not going to be offering it in a direct fashion. Moving westward again, although we're jumping across Quebec because I'll come back to Quebec, looking at, again, provinces that have have provincial activity but have a significant amount of district activity. There are 3 provinces that kind of fall into this model. I'll say a little bit about each of them. Looking first at Ontario. Ontario, and again, this is one of those nuances in terms of how it works. The province itself doesn't provide the distance education. The province itself provides a course management system that they have leased on behalf of all the districts, and they provide a standard course content. Each of the districts are responsible for creating their own online learning programs. In theory, what's supposed to happen is that if District A has extra capacity, if they can take, say, 3 or 4 extra students, and District B isn't offering a course but has 2 or 3 students that want to take a course in that, District B can enroll students into the online course of District A, provided that there is space available. And then I think there's supposed to be a $600 or $700 fee that goes along with it, so that the receiving school district essentially has some financial support for taking care of the student. there are some formal agreements in place in the Ontario eLearning Consortium. There's a group of 20-odd, well, they're not really odd, about 20 school districts that have agreed to waive that fee. I suppose they assume that with all the sharing that goes on, eventually it'll sort of work out in the end. And there, you know, then there's that monetary one that works as well, so that students can transfer, not necessarily transfer, students can enroll in a course from another district. Looking next to Alberta, Alberta again is slightly different. Alberta has a provincial body. It's the Alberta Distributed Learning Center, and they've got an online version of that. It's the VISTA Virtual School. And students throughout the province can take advantage of the distance ed provided by those. There are a number of other districts. As best I can count, about 14 or 16 districts that have created their own online learning programs in addition to what's provided by the province. So it's not like Alberta, sorry, it's not like Ontario where the province doesn't provide anything. In this case, the province provides fairly substantial offerings, and some districts have decided to either opt out of that altogether and create their own programs or use what's available at the provincial level and supplement that with their own program. It's also interesting to note that the provincial program in Alberta also serves students in the Northwest Territories and the Nunavut. Also students who are outside of Alberta but still wish to take an Alberta curriculum. So if you have a student, for example, who did their grade 9, 10, and 11 in Alberta and then moved to another province or moved to another country for their grade 12, they could still get an Alberta education through the Alberta Distributed Learning Center or their online version of that. British Columbia is a little bit different in that the thank you, Helen. According to the website, it says that it's in partnership with a school district. So if it is not tied to I'm just reading Helen's comment there. If it is not tied to the ministry at all, I think you guys probably need to update your website. Because if the website indicates that it's a provincial body, it doesn't indicate that it's ministry-led. It does indicate that it is ministry-funded. You are correct there. And it indicates that it's part Pembroke, I think, is the district that it says that it is partnered with. Although you can correct me if it's not Pembroke. Okay. Moving to British Columbia, unlike Alberta, Pembian Hills. Thank you. I knew it was a P, but there's so many districts across the country. And having never lived in Alberta, that's one that I'm not as familiar with. Unlike Ontario and Alberta, where there is a provincial body that's doing something, British Columbia has actually undergone a number of evolutions towards their distance education. The current one they've got now, as Tim has explained it to me, I'm sorry, Tim Winkleman. Is Tim here today, by the way? Let's scroll down. No, nobody under the T today. Is that the province through the website is called Learn Now BC, although the Virtual School Society logo is all over it. And Tim explained it to me once, the relationship between the two, and I see a couple of people here from Open School BC, and they could probably explain the relationship in, from that group, between those two groups much better than I can. But essentially, okay, thank you, Randy. Essentially, the province through this website, Learn Now BC, is a clearinghouse for all of the school boards that operate distributed learning programs. So as a student or a parent or a teacher or administrator, I could go into the website and I can find the six schools that are offering grade 10 math, or the seven, or not six schools, six programs or that are offering grade 10 math. Sorry, I was laughing at Eleanor's comment there. And if I have a student who is interested in that particular course, I can then enroll them in one of those programs. And the interesting thing about British Columbia, which as best I can tell doesn't happen anywhere else, is that the funding follows the student. In British Columbia, the funding for a student is divided, and I can't remember if it was 6 or 8, the BC people can tell me, units. And if I have a student who wants to do a course online from a district other than mine, either 1/6 or 1/8, that whatever that portion is of the funding for that student goes to the district who is offering the distance ed course. So it's a real interesting model. All three of these provinces have private programs as well, which I haven't mentioned much about. If I remember correctly, there are a couple, I think it's 3 or 4 that I've been able to find in Alberta. There are 12 independent schools that offer online programs in British Columbia, and there are 3 private ones that I know of in Ontario right now. The other interesting thing about British Columbia, that was in the private thing was on the side, sorry. The other interesting thing about British Columbia that I haven't seen in other provinces is the ministry is very direct in its oversight of what's going on in K-12 distributed learning there. More so than any province in terms of at least the documents that are publicly available or the information that's placed on the ministry website, they have more regulations when it comes specific to K-12 online learning than any other province. They, for example, the best one and one that the Americans always struggle with is this idea of seat time and how do you count attendance in an online environment. In most cases throughout the United States, in Canada for that matter, seat time or attendance is counted for online programs the same way it is for us or for face-to-face programs, brick-and-mortar programs. There's a count day for a lot of provinces, and if a student is registered on count day, the school gets the funding. And, you know, if they drop out or if they're no longer on the books the day following count day, then it doesn't matter because the school has the funding for it. In the case of British Columbia, they do have a count day for the brick-and-mortar schools, but the way in which the online programs are funded in terms of their per-pupil funding based on attendance is based on a multiple measures of that enrollment. So I think it's 3, and my BC folks can correct me if I'm here wrong, but there are 3 points in time throughout the school year in which you have to provide your enrollment levels. And if it's not 3, it's 4. One of those 2 numbers is running in my head. Where you have to provide your enrollment, and your funding is based upon your enrollment at that period of time. So it's not a single count day, like it is here in Ontario for us. I think it's the 30th of October is count day. So if the student is registered face-to-face or online on the 30th of October, the school gets funded for that student. So BC has a number of these regulations, and they've been more proactive than any other province, as best as Robin and I were able to tell, in coming up with specific regulations to differentiate the classroom experience from the online experience. And I thank Randy there for providing some of that additional information in the text box there. Looking at, I guess, the second last type of activity that goes on is, I've titled it primarily district activity. This corresponds with John's category of district, multi-district, or consortium-based ones that he has in the Keep and Pace report. 3 times it was, Randy, thank you. But John's category of district or multi-district really doesn't apply well in the case of Quebec. Distance ed in Quebec is provided in a number of different ways. SOFED, and do I have any Quebec people here? Anyone raise their hand or give me a smiley face if they're from Quebec? Not a soul. That's unfortunate. The other difficult thing about Quebec is that my French, I took 4 courses in university like 12 years ago, so it's limited to say the least. But SOFED is a organization that, as best I can tell, was originally created by the ministry but is not part of the ministry. And the ministry has given them responsibility for developing the distance ed content, and then they lease that content to various school districts. Right now they've got a little, I think Robert, or I guess it would be Robert, told me they've got, I think it's 207 or 208 courses right now, although the vast majority of those courses are still the old correspondence style courses. There are three English-speaking school districts that have their own distance ed programs, and as best I can tell, 37 French-speaking ones, and I shouldn't say as best I can tell, because when I went to it, I just thought there were 13, but apparently that's because there's 13 school districts, or 13 school regions, sorry, and then, and this goes back to my limited knowledge of French. Robert was telling me, you know, that I needed to go past that to the next page, and there's actually a list of 37 there. So that's actually another correction that you find from the report. In the report, they talk about Quebec. I think they say it's 13. Or I think I say it's 13. Yeah, I indicate 13, and it's actually 37, according to Robert. With the exception of the three English-speaking ones where I've been able to make contact with individuals in all three of those districts, my limited ability in French has made it difficult to make inroads into those French-speaking districts. So with their distance ed programs, I'm not sure how many of them are using exclusively self-ed material or if they've started developing their own material. If they're using exclusively self-ed material, chances are most of their distance ed is not in an online format. It's a correspondence format. But I'm not, again, sure exactly how they're running them there. The last category, and this was one that we had to come up with on our own because it was one that, well, it just doesn't exist in the U.S. experience. So there was no comparable version of this in the American one, was jurisdictions that utilize programs from other provinces, and that's the Canadian North, essentially. The Yukon, which follows BC's curriculum, utilizes programs that are in British Columbia. The Northwest Territories and Nunavut, both of which follow Alberta's curriculum, utilize programs based in Ontario, based in Alberta, sorry. And if you think about it, I mean, when you look at particularly the American experience, the fact that the North hasn't set up their own programs kind of makes sense. It's just a matter of capacity. The example we always use when we're talking to U.S. audiences about capacity, you know, how many versions of Algebra 1 do you actually need to develop before we say, okay, it's enough? Does every single state need to develop their own? And I think because of the economies of scale in the Canadian North, they're actually a little bit ahead of the game in this respect because they've come to the conclusion that instead of spending money designing courses and course material and course content that other people have already done, it may be better for us to simply access, access programs that are already available. And when you're talking about the numbers that you're looking at, I didn't actually even realize that things were this small until I started doing this report. Last year, there were like 4,800 K-12 students in all of the Yukon, and only a little bit less than 150 of them actually were involved in K-12 distance education. I think in the case of Northwest Territories, it's about 8,700 students, K-12 students across the territory. So, and in all honesty, I mean, I used to teach geography, so I knew the populations of the provinces, but I guess until I actually looked up the number of K-12 students there, it really didn't impress upon me how small the educational economies of these particular provinces were. I have to say, you guys have been a quiet group thus far, other than providing additional information to fill in some of the bones here. Just before Christmas, I did a similar presentation to this for the North American Council for Online Learning, And there were about 20 people in attendance, about two-thirds of them were Canadians, and I didn't get through all of my slides in that presentation. So I pared down the slides for you guys, and I'm just whipping through them. And I mention that because that's really all of the material that I have in there. If there are people from specific provinces here that would like to talk about more, if you have specific questions about things that are in the report, I'm more than happy to entertain them. I'll release the mic here in a second. I can tell you that we have at least two, possibly three sponsors lined up for the 09 version of the report. So we will be continuing this as we had hoped to do, probably sometime in early 2011. I'd say early March, we will probably start contacting people from various departments of education. So if you're here from a department of education, and I know our esteemed president had mentioned about being in, I think it was Nova Scotia, with a group from the Department of Education there, I would ask, and I'll show my contact information in a few minutes, that if you could drop me an email, so I've already got somebody to contact, so instead of just providing a general inquiry into the department, I actually have a targeted inquiry into the department. I see one question coming up, and I'll answer that, and then I'll release the mic so that you can go to, or people can ask other questions. There are a couple of Aboriginal programs that I know of, Sue. One is Credenda Virtual High School in Saskatchewan, which is run by Vince Hill. I'm a little surprised, actually, Vince is not here today. I'm not sure if he knew about it. I'm confident if he did, he would be, because he was at my NACL one. I can't speak that much about, because he, basically, I really, Vince has always been really good about giving me information, so I haven't had to go looking for information, so I tend to email Vince and he sends it to me and I copy and paste it in and just edit it. The other one that I know about, and I always pronounce the name wrong, Keetanook, let me pop over to my Google here and I'll get the proper name. It's one in Ontario that focuses up on Aboriginal flying communities in the, here it is, Keewaytanook Internet High School. They focus up on flying communities in the northern portion of Ontario. They have a really interesting model, and as a researcher, it's one that I'd love to go and find out more about. What they've done is they've set up a physical presence in each of the schools that they are, or each of the communities that they are in. And by physical presence, in some cases, it's just an apartment that's been converted into a computer lab. And most of the teachers that teach in the program are based in one or more of these communities. And in addition to teaching their online course, one of their responsibilities is to actually be physically in the school or the lab, the structure of the building that they've got there. Not to act as a teacher, but to act as a facilitator, a soft skills coach, if you will, with these particular students. One of my friends from high school, his older sister, was actually a teacher in the program, which is how it came on my radar screen initially. And I did forget to mention one, and I noticed somebody helped me out and put it in there for me. Sunchild E-Learning in Alberta is another one that is Aboriginally focused, which I think we include specifically in the report when we talk about Alberta. I know it's linked into the list at the end. So those are three that I know about that have a specific focus upon Aboriginal youth. I don't know if the person who, because it was just NAIT, who wrote in about the Sunchild program, if they're actually from the Sunchild program or want to speak about what they do there, or if anyone else has any questions. I'll just release the mic here now and we can chat.
Well, thanks, Michael, for that. It's Terry. One of the issues that the Alberta Education Ministry is struggling with here is just how to ensure collaboration and sort of economy of scale when you have the distributed boards all offering virtual courses, not all of them, but more than a handful. And trying to see how are these really public domain? Are they owned by the individual schools, by the teachers? Those sorts of issues. I wonder if you have any thoughts on a sort of a best model for organizing the kind of provincial-wide initiative when you have local school divisions who are all in sort of semi-competitive positions, but all realizing that there's something to be gained by working together. Is there any province you think that's really resolved that kind of tension or issue?
I don't know about resolved, but I think there's a couple of things going on in a number of different provinces that I think you could pull out as good examples. The first would be some of the things that are happening here in Ontario. The fact that the province has bought into a CMS, I think, is a useful thing because given the economy of scale, for a lot of school districts, the amount of money that's spent leasing a course management system is fairly extensive. And if you can pull together resources, I don't know how all CMSs provide their licenses, but a lot of them base upon groups of students. So if you've got 500 to 1,000 students, well, if I've got 501 students and, the guy next to me has 501 students, we both get knocked up into that higher category. If we could combine together and a couple of students dropped out, all of a sudden we're paying, again, for the same category, but we're only having paid half of the thing. So the fact that the province has leased a course management system that all the program, all the district programs can use, I think, is a useful model. The other thing I like about what they've done here in Ontario is that the province, after a number of years when districts had been creating their own courses, the province had pulled together all of these courses to figure out, okay, what's the best, how can we use all the materials that have been developed to create the best grade 10 math course? And now if you want to use the provincial stuff, you've got to use the provincial content. So you, in theory, if the course is a well-designed one, you don't have, as Lynn alluded to earlier, this reinvention of the wheel by each district. Moving westward, one of the things I really like about what the guys in British Columbia have been doing, the idea of measuring attendance on a rolling model. I know in British Columbia, I think it was three times that Randy had indicated was the actual number. Personally, I'd like to see that increased probably to 4 to 6, just based upon completion times with students. I also like the fact in British Columbia that funding follows the student. I don't think 100% of the funding should follow the student, because if you're running a supplemental program, obviously the school that the kid is still sitting in at the computer in the resource center somewhere in a computer lab or distance ed room, I think, they're obviously still using resources. And I think in the way in which British Columbia has got the funding chunked up, I think they've got a unit built in for that. But the fact that it doesn't rely upon the goodwill of districts to either pay a fee or come up with some other arrangement. If the funding automatically, or a portion of the funding automatically follows the student regardless of where they're registered, I think that's a useful thing as well. Opening up the content to allow for blended learning models like you see in Nova Scotia or in New Brunswick, sorry, in Newfoundland, I think that's really powerful. So there are, several ways in which, several things that are going on in different provinces that I think if we pulled the best of what you've got in all these different places, you could come up with a real powerful model. Unfortunately, I haven't seen anybody doing that. Not just in Canada, but throughout the United States and in other jurisdictions where they have virtual schools as we know them. So we're no more behind than anybody else. Eleanor, you had a question or something to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment about the BC situation and ask a question about what you found in Ontario. Open School has hosted a learning management system for a number of years for the province, and they actually offer two. The districts have their choice between Moodle and WebCT, but it's a user pay system. We get no funding from the province or no support from the province to offer that service to the district, so the district actually has to pay for a portion of the license based on their use. And we have about 39 districts in the province who are using our service, about 25 to 30,000 seats. Just wonder, in Ontario, is that CMS system provincially funded, or do the districts actually have to pay a fee to use it?
I believe, and if there's someone here from Ontario who can correct this, my understanding, the way that it's been described to me, is that the province actually picks up the fee for it. So the province pays for the infrastructure. Obviously, they've also paid for the creation of the course content, or they've essentially... I'm not sure if I clicked on audio when I started talking here. So did I answer any of your question, Eleanor, or was I just talking to myself there a second ago?
I think I heard part of the answer, that the province does pick up the tab for the learning management system. And I think you also said the content development.
As I understand it, yes, although a lot of their initial development was stuff that they had gotten from the districts, because there had been a number of districts that had been quite active in developing content initially, and they began by their content development process by actually doing a survey of all of the content that was actually out there to see what was already available and how they could combine the course materials the district had created to create one super course, I guess is the best way to put it. I think at the point when in which I released the mic, was that there's an organ, part of it is eLearning Ontario, and I noticed Donna had just put in the ELO, which is eLearning Ontario, which apparently is part of the ministry, as best I can tell. And all of their new courses that they're designing, as Donna mentions, the ministry essentially seconds the individuals to create that content.
Thank you.
Guy, I see you have a question. Would you like to click on the microphone and pose that? Guy, if you're having a problems with the audio, you can just write in the text box what your question or comment was. Hi, I'm just trying to scroll back through the texting that was going on. It was fast and furious there for a while, and I know I had seen some questions flashing through. So if those were missed, please type them in again, or you can pose them right away here on the microphone. Sorry, Guy, I just took the microphone away from you because I couldn't hear a sound. So you'll have to text in your comment.
I see while Guy is typing there, that actually, his comments there point to one of the shortcomings of the report. He mentioned about the regions. That was actually where the mistake with the 13 regions and 37 French school boards came in when it came to it. So, and I'm hoping, I'm not looking at the thing, but I'm hoping Guy is typing in his question, because Quebec is probably the area that I know the least about, only because of the fact that I don't speak French. I saw someone earlier had mentioned about had asked about open content. The only place that I know that is using open content right now, it's actually an initiative out of Utah. Ontario is probably fairly familiar with this, probably more so than what I am. It's David Wiley has gotten together with a group of people in Utah to create a charter school called the Open High School of Utah. And essentially, it's an online high school that is only using open source content as its curriculum. And I've just added in the link there in the text box. so that you can check out some of the things that they're doing. And I know they've created a wiki to try to collect all of their resources. So that in addition to only using open source content, they're providing the content that they're using to others. So if you are involved with an online learning program here in Canada, it's worthwhile to go and look at their wiki to see if there's any open content that they've found in your particular area that you might be able to use in your own teaching.
Before we lose the MECY group here, I see they have to leave. I don't know if you noticed, Michael, they left you a message earlier on in the texting with a phone number for future contact. I think they wanted to correspond a bit about that. So make sure you don't lose that before you leave, okay?
And I'm not sure when our official stop time is, but I'm welcome to stay here and chat as long as people have questions, or as long as the group wants to sit here and chat with each other, because I noticed that there's a lot of conversation going on in the text message that I don't need to have anything to do with, because you're answering each other's questions, which is quite nice, because I'm actually learning a lot from this as well, particularly from the group from Manitoba, which was one of the areas where, as I'd mentioned, there was probably about a half dozen principals that I knew that tried to explain the system for me, but weren't quite familiar with all the ins and outs of what was actually going on at the ministry level.
Well, before we lose any more participants to other obligations, I do want to take a moment, Michael, to thank you for coming to CIDR again to share your research with us. It's just fantastic work you're putting together here and encapsulating for us what's happening across Canada in online education. And I know from the attendance here that everyone's appreciating that you've made the effort to do this for us across the country. And I'd also like to mention our next CIDR session before everybody takes off. And it is a presentation by Dr. Richard Kenny and Carolyn Park from Athabasca University. And they'll be looking at how mobile learning can enhance nursing practice in education. And in that presentation, they'll be discussing a project to trial the use of mobile learning in the Baccalaureate of Nursing curriculum in a Western Canadian college program. So hopefully, I know it's it sounds specific to nursing, but I'm sure that there'll be a lot to be learned by participants who have their interest in other areas of curriculum and so forth, and other programs. So hopefully you can join us for that on Wednesday, February 4th, and that again is at 11 a.m. Mountain Time. So I believe Michael's got a few more minutes here if anyone has any questions, and thank you again for joining us.
I saw a question that asked about, Wendy's question that asked about training available for teachers. To the best of my knowledge, the only program that I know about is actually a course offered by a Queen's University faculty member. His name is Jeff Boulette, and I only know this because he was actually attending the session that I did with NACOL. There are a number of interesting programs that are starting to develop in the United States. One of them is the Teacher Education Goes Into Virtual Schooling, or TEVIS, program. And at Iowa State, so if you Google TEVIS, it'll be the first thing that comes up. They've got a wonderful program they've been developing there with the FIPSI grant. Boise State University has also created a certificate in online learning. To the best of my knowledge, there aren't any other, and Plymouth State University also has a program that they've done in conjunction with the Virtual High School Global Consortium in Concord, Massachusetts, which is specific to teaching online at a K-12 level. To the best of my knowledge, there's not anything else beyond Jeff's course in Canada, although that would really surprise me if that was actually the case. I'm sure there's somebody who teaches at some university in Ontario or Newfoundland or Alberta or British Columbia. And I mentioned those four just because of either the number of universities they have or because of the length of time they've been involved in distance education, where they don't have a course that's offered that looks at teaching and learning online at the K-12 level. I will be honest and say I haven't done an extensive review of all of the colleges of education or faculties of education to look at their their course offerings. I think what you will find, though, in all honesty, Wendy, is as Donna mentioned there, most of the online programs provide fairly extensive professional development in-house to their teachers before they either before they start teaching or ongoing while they are teaching.
Michael, I have to point out again, as Terry did also earlier, Athabasca has a master's program and a certificate and diploma programs in distance education, and I had to point that out since I graduated from that.
Go ahead, Wendy.
This is a question for Terry, actually. I'm just curious about the master's and diploma programs in distance education. How are they received throughout the public system for hires of teachers going into the system?
Right. I don't know if I have a definitive answers to that. They are eligible for additional year service that you, it means that a K-12 teacher gets a pay raise. I know that for a fact. I guess unfortunately, maybe Lynn or somebody who's been through that program would be able to answer better than myself. I guess I just know that the number of the leading people in Western Canadian, especially K-12's online schools, have gone through that program, and whether they got hired because of the program or they were in the program and wanted additional training, I'm not sure, but they certainly are quite prevalent in the K-12 system. Hope that helps.